we're going to just carry on from where we left off yesterday. The Advocate Funamurva will just lead us in that process. But before we go, is there any apologies?
Actually, the only apology that I have is Mr. Shalvini, and that's it.
Okay, so other members are saying they're on their way, but we haven't got time because at 9:45 we have to adjourn this meeting because the House is sitting at 10 o'clock. So, Advocate Funamurva, over to you. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. The next question that has to be considered is a constitutional concern, and that is in respect of the decision of the tribunal and whether there should be a discretion or whether there should be clear steps set out. Now, we initially had a discretion for the tribunal, and then, if I recall it, Treasury was concerned about whether that discretion would not be seen as arbitrary. But it was pointed out in comments from, and especially the opinions from, I think it was the DTI's opinion, that in the matter of credit regulator versus Opperman, the court actually said that if there's a lack of discretion on the part of a court to forfeit property, that is an arbitrary deprivation of property. So it's actually the contrary. So in other words, the constitutional position would be for the tribunal to have a discretion when they make a decision. So it would be, I think it would be recommended that we bring the discretion back. And then at the same time, we can address a number of other concerns that were raised about the proportionality aspects of the measure. So there was a concern that you will affect the credit provider, but there's almost no effect to the consumer. The credit provider might have been 100% correct in how he or she dealt with the matter, and the consumer might have been the one who maybe misled and gave false figures, etc., etc. So none of that is taken into account. And I think this is why I would recommend that we put those things down. So part of the discretion of the tribunal can then be guided by factors such as what was the role of the consumer, what was the role of the credit provider, and I would think, I know that there's been some concerns about whether the credit providers will participate fully and provide the documents that they have to provide, etc., etc. So I think we can even make provision for the role of the credit provider during the process, so that all of these things can be taken into account. I think that would be an incentive for the credit providers to do their part. But I mean, the number of criteria, we can list them in the bill. We can make some proposals from between NCR and myself, and then when the committee considers the new draft of the bill, we can consider whether those factors are in fact something that you would like there, if there was something that we need to add, because it won't be a closed list of criteria. The tribunal's discretion will be broad, but we will highlight certain things. To say one thing that I was also thinking of, even if our measure is once-off, like we've now decided yesterday in respect of the suspension and the extinguishing, whether the person has previously applied for debt review, whether the person has maybe been sequestrated before or placed under administration should maybe also be taken into account, because it's also debt intervention measures that the person could have succeeded with. So on the next question, like I say, I would definitely recommend that it be discretion, because that is the constitutional position, and then that we deal with the proportionality issues under this discretion.
Honourable Albert.
Thank you, Chairperson. Advocate Primova. I think I had to leave a little bit early yesterday, so I apologise for that. Just before I left, I just made a note that you should take note of, and that is that we can also advise, in terms of the remedies given by the Commissioner, that they're not bound to extinguish all of the debt, that we can create a sliding scale of sorts, where we say that under certain circumstances, you only write off 20% of the debt, and not the whole debt. Depending on the individual circumstances of the person and taking into account the various factors that you've mentioned and maybe some other factors that we can still insert. And at other times there might be an argument to say, well, we write off 80% of the debt, or there might be a situation where we say we don't write off the debt at all, but we write off the interest and the the other cost that goes with the that was added to the initial loan. So I think we must just add that option as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable McPherson, welcome back. Do you have anything to say on this particular point? No, you've covered. Okay, I think that if with regard to the discretion, then we should give it to them. But like you said, we need to put in certain ways in which they can be, you know, use their discretion. Okay, if we can move to the next point.
The next point is something that was discussed at length even in the committee before the bill was finalized. And this has to do with the period during which the rights of the consumer to apply for credit should be limited. The bill itself gives a discretion to the tribunal to limit the right to apply for credit, and only up to 36 months. Certain comments were made to say, but this should be mandatory because you are extinguishing a debt. It's quite a big impact on a credit provider. There should be this result on the adverse rather result on the consumer, to say that there must be a rehabilitation period for the consumer to go through this. Some persons mentioned that you should bring it up to the sequestration period of 10 years. It is maybe a bit long because it's not the same amount of debt that will be extinguished. I also would suggest that if we reconsider the 36 period, the first question is, should it be mandatory or should it be part of a discretionary order that the tribunal can give? The second question is whether the 36-month period, in other words, 3 years, should remain. Now, this ties in, and perhaps you should discuss that, in fact, maybe first, is your suspension period. So if a person cannot solve, then that will be referred to the tribunal to make an order for suspending that agreement. Some of the comments indicated that 2 years is a very short period for a person to get back up on their feet. So you need to give the person a realistic or reasonable time to find another job and to actually start earning money and be able to repay their debt, and 2 years might be too short. Another concern with the 2 year suspension was that it could increase that moral hazard, where a person might say, you know what, to wait 2 years and work on an informal basis is fine if I can get my debt extinguished at the end of the 2 year period. Whereas if you make it longer, one of the proposals was five years, then the person might be deterred from doing that. But in the end, the period of suspension is not a constitutional issue. The constitutional issue is that there must be reasonableness. So what is the purpose of suspending the agreement? The purpose of suspending the agreement is to see if this consumer can again start participating in the credit market and start repaying his or her debt. So we just need to give a reasonable period for that person to get back up on their feet to pay. So if we make, I just want to make this example. If the period of suspension, so the suspension is 12 months at a time and it is renewed for 5 years, and we then add a 5-year limitation, we have a 10-year period that this consumer is out of the credit market for 50,000 rand, whereas the sequestration is 10 years for millions of rand. So, you know, I think that is maybe something, I think the two questions for me run together. What is the period of suspension? And secondly, or what is the period in which the suspension can be repeated, extended, in other words, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years? And then once we have that number, how long should the person be excluded from the credit market? In other words, what is the total that we're thinking of? And then should that exclusion be mandatory? So I think those are the three questions.
Honourable Elwood.
Chief Mason.
Yeah, there must be proportion to answer. There must be proportion.
There must be proportionality, I think, as a rule. And I think the discretion of the commissioner is important because every person's individual circumstances differ, although there might be similarities as well, obviously. So what I'm saying to you, I don't have a final answer on this one, an exact answer, but I do think there must be proportionality. 10 years is too long. You can't treat a 50,000 rand debt the way you would deal with sequestration, first of all. And secondly, there are individual circumstances. So if according to the commissioner, a person can get out of debt quicker, there's no reason why you can't have the person rehabilitated quicker. You know, we always compare ourselves with the United States in terms of sequestrations and liquidations. They have a quicker turnaround to rehabilitate people generally, and it helps the economy because when people make mistakes, you know, they shouldn't be punished for a long time in their lives. They should learn their mistakes, and after a while they become better consumers and they become better business people. So when you do, you know, take them out of the market, it should be proportional to achieving the rehabilitation where they learn their lesson, but also where the credit provider is certain that the credit provider is not prejudiced in the end of the day. And also, what's important, if you take the people out of the market for too long, you diminish the market as well. So what I'm saying is there's a lot of factors to be taken into account. I don't have an exact answer, but there must be proportionality. It cannot be 10 years, as far as I'm concerned. And there must be a discretion from the commissioner. But we can look at guidelines to say, well, you know, these are certain standard rules. When a person is in position X, Y, Z, whatever it may be, then this will be the guideline of how long this person must be taken out of the consumer market or the credit market, and how long that person must be rehabilitated. But that's something we still need to consider properly. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable McPherson and then Honourable Mantash.
Thank you very much, and my apologies for yesterday. I haven't been feeling so great and still not 100%. So if I do have to leave, Chair, the Honourable Hill Lewis will fill in for me. Just on this point, I think that I'm starting to lean towards more of a minimum sort of mandatory rehabilitation process or period. So it's sort of a minimum process, and then also allows the NCT to have a rehabilitation process up to a maximum period, whatever that may be. But I'm sort of uncomfortable with the suggestion that the NCT may not actually have a minimum process. So I think that it has to be a balance between, you know, not keeping people out for too long, but not keeping them out for too little to allow them to rehabilitate. Because I think that what we don't want, and I hope everyone read the very good op-ed in the Business Day today, where, you know, while we also don't want to, impact the credit market adversely, we also don't want to deny people the opportunity, particularly poor South Africans, from accessing credit. And so that's where the balance has to be found. So I would be in favour of a minimum mandatory period, and then allowing the NCT to then say that they may impose up to a maximum.
Honourable Mantash.
Thank you, Chairperson. I apologise for coming late. I was saying I want to apologize, Chairperson, up front for coming late to the subcommittee. It was reasons beyond my control. Whilst I agree with the former speakers that our aim is not to exclude people from credit, from accessing credit, we would propose that we keep the rehabilitation period of not more than 2 years maximum. Because we don't want to punish them. We want them to be participating in the mainstream economy. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Yes, Honourable Elbert.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just sort of had another idea. Obviously, the commissioners have a discretion, and I agree with Honourable Montage as well. But let's say that the commissioners say, well, you know, I'm not writing off all the debt in this case. I'm writing off 50%, for argument's sake. Then we must look at whether that person can, within that 2 years, pay off the remainder of the debt. And so that might not be possible. That might mean we would say, okay, well, I'm taking you out of the credit market for 2.5 years, for instance. So while 2 years is a good starting point, the discretion might allow for a little bit more. But maybe we can, and I don't have an answer on this, but maybe we can put an upper limit and say, because I said, not 10 years, not like sequestration, but maybe there must be an upper limit, like 5 years. And I'm just thinking out loud, that could be the answer. But it depends on what the decision of the commissioner would be, and whether it would be possible for that person to within that time do that. If he has to pay 50% back, can he do it within 2 years? If he can, then that's fine. If not, maybe a little bit longer, but it's something we must discuss. If we say 2 years, then that will also limit the discretion of the commissioner, because if he wanted to write off 50% and he would see the person can't pay back in 2 years, then he would have to say, well, I have to write off more so you can fit into the 2 years. But we'll have to discuss that. Thank you.
Honourable McPherson.
Yeah, I really don't think that's sort of an unreasonable way to see it. Because I think that, you know, the commissioner is going to have to view each case on its individual merits. And, you know, I do think that we must give people an opportunity to solve. I think that must always be, you know, the first instance, is to allow them to come right in their debt. And that's why I do think that saying a maximum of 2 years is asking the entity to assist applicants, but, you know, with sort of one arm tied behind their back. And that's why I think that there's an opportunity to say, look, that there should be a minimum of exclusion for 2 years. But that there is an ability, if the NCT looks at the application and says, look, you know, I do, and the individual themselves says, you know, I do want to actually come right on this debt, but I'm not going to be able to do it in 2 years. Can I actually have some more time? And the commissioner can say, well, you know, in terms of these regulations, we can do so up to a maximum of 5 years. So I think that flexibility has to be there with the commission, and also to assist the consumer. But what we don't want to do, and it's what that opinion piece spoke to, you know, very well this morning, said that you don't want to restrict credit to poor consumers. You don't want to have a tightening up of the market that actually makes their circumstances even worse. And I'm concerned, Chair, that if we don't have that flexibility, if we don't have that, you know, that opportunity for consumers to solve, that in fact that their future prospects are going to be limited. So I would ask that we really look at this sort of with an open mind, to to say, let's have a minimum period, and I don't hear anyone saying that they disagree with sort of a minimum period of 2 years. And in fact, the NCT may say, well, that is, you know, the maximum period of exclusion that we want to give someone, because that is the minimum that we can apply. But on a particular individual's case, we think there's an ability to assist them, therefore we're going to make it 3 years, because we want to give them that opportunity to solve. And if they do so in that period, that in fact, that process would fall away.
Before Honourable Montash comes in, I just want to say something. I don't know if we're all on the same page here. What we're talking about is the period for which the right of the consumer to apply for credit could be limited. In other words, then, after they've received, you know, after their debt's been eradicated, then it's that two-year period. And the reason why we've put in that period is to stop people from borrowing money, going through the debt process, and getting it written off, and then reapplying immediately for more debt and trying to do it again. So this has got to do with the people that have had 100% of their debt written off, not people that are going to pay off 50% and then another 50%. And I think that we should definitely look at that. So we're saying here that we want that period to be, well, I agree with Honourable Montash, that it be a two-year period. So if you get 100% of your debt eradicated, then you've got 2 years before you can come back into the credit market again. It's not about 2 years to pay off if you've only got a 50% write-off. It's not about that period. It's about the period where you won't be able to access the credit market because you've had a 100% write-off type of thing. But before Honourable McPherson, Honourable Montash.
Yeah, Chairperson, you have read my mind. I think a period of more than 2 years will be punitive to consumers. I say it from experience. If you allow them more than that, it will be punitive. I appeal with members of the subcommittee to agree on the two-year period.
Honourable Montash? I mean, Honourable McPherson.
Montash and McPherson's not too far apart. I think what actually could be more punitive to consumers is having an exclusion period, that is seen to be, you know, sort of too short and too easy. You know, if you've had 50,000 rand of debt written off, what I was speaking to earlier is saying that, you know, if someone has had 50% of their debt written off or 100% of their debt written off, and their circumstances change, and they say, look, actually, I want to pay this money back, but, you know, I can't do so in such a short space of time. But I don't want to have this, you know, against me. I want to go, I want to have a clean record. I think that's something that we need to look at is how does that work. But insofar as saying that someone who's had 50,000 rand debt written off and they are excluded from the credit market for 2 years, I think that is a very short time. I think it's a very short time to go through an education process, which I don't think we've had a full discussion in. How does that look? Is that even going to happen? I'm still not convinced that there are plans in place for that to happen. And so the period of two years seems quite short as a minimum or as a maximum. And that's why I think that there needs to be some discretion. That we can say a minimum, Mr. Montash, can be 2 years. But depending on the circumstances, depending on how many loans this person has had, how much money that person has taken out, I think that there does need to be flexibility. Should someone be excluded from the credit market because they are looking for 10,000 rand to be written off for 3 years or 4 years? No, I don't think so. Would 2 years be applicable to someone like that? Quite possibly. But should someone who's asking for 10,000 rand to be written off and someone who's been asking for 50,000 rand to be written off, you know, be excluded for the same period of time? I don't think so. I think that there has to be flexibility from the NCT on that.
Okay, well, I think that we're not going to agree here on that, so this will go to the committee. This clause will be one of those clauses that go to the committee, I think. Or else we're going to just go in circles all morning and, you know. So, back to you, Advocate Fanamerva.
Thank you, G. Just the other question, I think we only focused on the rehabilitation period itself, but how many times, currently we have the suspension period, so the consumer cannot solve. Then the consumer is referred to the tribunal. The tribunal suspends the credit agreement for 12 months. The bill currently only provides for a review just before that 12-month period is up. So proposals were that it should be reviewed every 6 months, especially now that we know how this is going to happen. This is going to be a form of a debt intervention officer from the NCR, but it will be someone who has the same skills as a debt counsellor. So proposals are that there should be a six-monthly review. Of course, if things have changed in the 6 months, then there can be an amendment of the order. If nothing has changed, then at the end of the 12-month period, the tribunal will then extend that suspension to give the consumer further chance to start earning some money and be able to repay the debt. The question then is, should that be extended for a third period, for a fourth year, for a fifth year, or what is the time that we think is required for a consumer to find a job and to start earning money and actually be able to get themselves again up on their feet financially speaking. Is 2 years sufficient? There were concerns about 2 years not being sufficient. Proposals were for 5 years, that the contract can be suspended up to 5 years. I don't know, what would be the correct number?
Members? What do we think here? Do we think we keep... Is the on the bill as it sits, is it 2 years?
On the bill, it is a suspension period for 12 months. Before the 12 months, it is reviewed, and it can then be extended for a further period of 12 months. At the end of that second year, that is when the extinguishing was considered.
Honourable Montoya.
Chair, I propose that we leave it as it is.
Okay. No members are putting their hands up, so we can move.
Okay. The next one is something totally new. It is not something that we considered in the bill and came up during the public hearing. The question of prescription. The bill does not say anything about prescription while a contract is suspended. Now, if a contract is suspended, the credit from the moment of application, the credit provider cannot claim anything via a court process from the consumer. So the question is, what do we do about prescription? Do we say nothing? Do we just keep it as is? Because let's say the consumer goes to the National Credit Regulator in the 2 years after the debt or the last time that the consumer admitted that they owe the money. Then there's a year for the credit provider to issue summons. Otherwise, the debt will prescribe. So if the tribunal then suspends for another year, we are a year past prescription. So if the debt is then not extinguished, the credit provider is in the situation that he or she cannot claim. So it is a bit of a conundrum. It is a legal problem. I would really suggest that we look at it. The easiest proposal out of this would simply be to say that during the period of the debt intervention, prescription does not run. So in other words, you have prescription. If it was 2 years, it stops with the day of application, and it takes up again the moment the intervention is done. Then you don't interfere with that relationship.
Members, do we accept that proposal that during that period of 2 years that the prescription doesn't take? Are we happy with that? Yep, everybody's happy. We can move again.
Okay, the next one I think is an easy question because I think I know the answer, but there were concerns about what does extinguish mean. Now, extinguish is not really a legal term. In law, we talk about full and final settlement, we talk about written off, those terms, but there are problems that accountancy words or that the field of accountancy started using the same words as law does, and they've given it different meanings. So and the committee was then concerned if we say that it is written off in full, that there's in a different meaning if you're looking at accountancy. So we use the word extinguish, but it is not a word that is used often in law, so it's not something that has a base. One of the problems that I think NCR NCT alerted us to is that the credit provider, where the debt is extinguished, for instance, let's say the agreement was unlawful, then the credit provider, it is not tested in court yet, but the credit, well, I'm sure they can help me if I'm wrong, the credit provider then comes on unjustified enrichment and say, but I've given you something, you were unjustifiably enriched and you need to pay me back. And you put the debt in exactly the same situation, which is not what is the intention here. So the extinguishing, I think we need to add a definition for what extinguish means. And I think that the definition should be there will be no further obligations or claims, whether in statutory or common law. And that, in other words, nothing. You cannot go to any type of law in South Africa to claim this money. It is extinguished, it's done. I do suggest that we have some kind of definition like that.
Members? Honourable Alberts?
Yes. If extinguished means that it's gone forever, then obviously all legal remedies that could be used must also be neutralised in the end of the day.
So we agree with the definition by Advocate Funamova?
Mm-hmm.
No. Thank you.
And maybe here the note that I have for myself is that the regulator or the tribunal might have to advise us here. What would happen if the tribunal looks at the facts before them and they say to themselves, no, this consumer is abusing the measure. We can see that this is not right. What happens to that? So in other words, the tribunal might have suspended the agreement for a period of 12 months. After that review, the comments that came back and the consumer agrees, or it becomes very clear that the consumer is actually not trying to find a job at all. And the tribunal then says, no, but look, you need to also show us that you are trying to do something here. And the tribunal then says, but this person is clearly abusing the system. We're not furthering the suspension, we're not stopping, we're not even going to extinguish. Is that person then, is that the end of it? And I would almost suggest if it is an abuse of the system, that should be the end of it. Or do we then refer the consumer back to the debt review process or the debt intervention process to start all over again to see what can be done to assist the consumer to solve?
Chair, we don't want people to abuse the system. That's point one. I'm not sure if we say it must be renewed, for how long will we say the period should be. But the main point is we don't want people to abuse what we're trying to do to protect our consumers. I have no proposal for the period that it can be renewed. Maybe the NCR can assist us in this.
I just want to say before NCR come in, or the example that you've given is not a good example, because most of the people who are unemployed have stopped looking for jobs because they've been looking for the last 2.5 years and now they still can't find, so they've become disgruntled or disillusioned and they've just disengaged with that process. So using that as a reason is not a good reason to stop somebody from getting access to debt relief, debt extinguishing. So I think that when you talk about if they abuse the system, I don't know what we're talking about here, unless they're committing fraud when they're saying, no, I don't have a job, I can't pay, da-da-da, but meanwhile they do have some income. And then they'll be automatic, I take it, it'll be picked up during the investigation by the National Credit Regulator and the Tribunal. So I'm a little bit concerned why this is even being a question here, because, you know, it's very subjective what you could call abuse, because some people might say, well, you know, I'm not currently looking for a job. No, because I've tried. I live in a tiny town in, you know, in Lebohong in Mpumalanga, and I've looked for a job for the last 3 years. I can't find a job. I've given up. I've gone home. I've still got this debt. I'm worried. Blah, blah, you know. So I think that we must be careful about what you mean by that abuse. And my question is, does the, unless it's a fraud, I need some clarity around, if you know of any advocate, what do you mean by abuse of the system? Thank you. Honourable McPherson, first, yeah.
I mean, I think in a perfect world, there would be no abuse of this process. But we live in an imperfect world, and there will be abuse, you know, whether we like to recognise that or not. The only way to stop abuse is to incentivize people either positively or negatively not to do so. So in this instance, I think the question is correct by yourself, Honorable Williams. You know, what is the potential for abuse? I mean, I see the potential for abuse existing in the application that's made. That someone says, I don't have a job, they do have a job. I do have a job, and I don't earn more than X, and they actually do. That is where the potential for abuse is. Is it deliberate fraud? I mean, I don't know. You know, we can never make those judgment calls. But I think that if there is a view held by the NCT or the NCR that there is an abuse in the application that's being made, you know, should that application be set aside for a period? I think that that's the discussion that should be had. Or does the application start again? Because if someone comes and they say, you know, we earn more than 7,500 rand, well then, they're not eligible for an application. So why would the NCR have to restart that application for them? You know, they should just be said, you know, please leave, you know, goodbye. Let's say they earn less than 7,500 rand, but in a formal job, and the application gets down the road and it gets to the NCT. The NCT does a bit of investigating, and actually a credit provider comes along and says, yeah, but you know, actually there's these deposits of, you know, 500 Rand every month, and we believe that is money that they are getting for employment. Then I think that that's a little bit more different. It needs to be looked at differently. So, Chair, I mean, I do think it is something, I think it's a worthwhile question that the advocate has asked, and I'm not sure it's something that we can just, you know, dismiss as saying, well, you know, we'll leave it up to the NCR or NCT to decide. I think that there actually needs to be a schedule for these types of things, because we also have to be able to say to the credit providers that, you know, we also take this seriously, that, you know, if you believe that people are earning, you know, more than what they stated, you know, please can you help us on that issue? So I mean, I do think that there needs to be a mechanism of how to deal with dishonest applications.
Advocate for a moment.
Thank you, Chair. If we accept that, and I think the question for me was answered through the conversation, if we accept that abuse, the only abuse that we feel would justify the application not to be accepted is something where there was a misleading factor involved, whether it was fraud, outright fraud, negligence, whatever. But that is covered in our offences, because we do say any misleading information or even manipulating your finances in order to qualify would be offences. So I think then that is in fact covered.
Okay, we can move to the next clause.
The next one is about the prescribed measures. We had a number of constitutional concerns about the prescribed measures. The concerns were mostly that they're too broad. The discretion that we're giving to the minister is too broad. It borders on plenary powers. In fact, the one, especially 88F2C, which deals with where there isn't efficient measures, where there aren't enough measures to allow a consumer to efficiently participate in the debt system, debt review system, then that is where the minister can step in. And that specifically was seen as plenary powers to an extent. The opinions that we received from Treasury and from DDI's councils indicated that there are two clauses only that could pass constitutional muster, and those two are the ones that deal with urgent matters. So if there is a significant exogenous shock to the economy or if there is a national disaster, with the caution that those terms need to be defined. So the proposal that I would want to put before the committee is that we need to consider whether it is in fact necessary to run those urgent matters even through regulation, or whether it shouldn't happen through legislation. In other words, shouldn't be fully scrapped 88F to avoid any constitutional concerns about this broad discretion. Because even on those two, council were concerned that it might be very broad, because it is not clear what can be done, what the measures are. So it keeps a risk out there. And legislation can be passed quickly through Parliament if there's an urgency. The rules allow for that. Alternatively, the proposal would be that we only retain those two possible circumstances, and that we then tighten up the rest in respect of who can qualify and what the process would be.
Honourable Montash, Honourable McPherson, Honourable Albert.
That we remove 88F2C. And leave the two.
Chair, I think that Advocate van der Merwe's points are well made. I'm glad that we can agree on C and D being removed, and I'm sure Advocate Alberts would agree to that as well. I'm just concerned about the lack of clear definition on A and B. I think one can always, interpret what an exogenous shock is, what a natural disaster is. I'll use the case of the drought in the Western Cape. I mean, for 2 years people have been saying it's a natural disaster. 2 years people have disagreed that it's a natural disaster. And we know what's gone on through that process. So I would think that, to take away that ambiguity over what an exogenous shock or what a natural disaster is or isn't, I like the idea of bringing that piece of legislation to Parliament on a case-by-case need. And we know that there is precedent for legislation being taken through Parliament in a couple of days. I think the advocate said 3 or 4 days it was done. and I think that that can be done on this instance as well. So I would hope that all of 88F would be removed.
Chairperson, I think that it would be better to move with new legislation when a situation arises, because Parliament would then also have oversight. As I said before, this bill is a parliamentary bill, and we should limit the influence that the executive has on it as much as possible. So my position would be that if we're going to, you know, as Honourable McPherson said, we can look at definitions of what an exogenous shock might be and so forth, but I think that in each case then, an emergency bill must be moved whereby we are involved and make sure that the situation is what it seems to be and that we can make sure that the response to it is in proportion to the reality. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we've got two different opinions. So we'll take this to the big committee. Thank you.
The next two questions relate to the reporting by credit providers and debt counsellors on reckless lending. The concern that was raised by both credit providers and debt counsellors are that it is very, very difficult. First off, in respect of credit providers, there is the self-incrimination argument, which unfortunately is correct, and if it's retained, we will have to look at that, where if they themselves were participants in reckless lending before, it's constitutionally not allowed for them to have to report themselves. So we'll have to think about that. But the other concerns for me are also something that the committee need to consider. First off, it's very difficult for two persons to determine, to do the same calculations on an agreement. And the NCT did a presentation, I think the NCR spoke to it and the NCT confirmed it, where there was a case where the NCR was of the view that something was in fact reckless, but when the bank system was checked, it showed that in fact it was done correctly. So it's very difficult to determine what is reckless lending. Furthermore, credit providers were saying that this is very difficult because this means that they will have to request the system information from other credit providers, which could be anti-competitive, in order to do that. Both debt counsellors and credit providers have indicated that it's a very lengthy process and very costly. Because even if it's quite clear that there is no reckless lending on an agreement, they will still have to do the checks now in order to...
I'm terribly sorry, but we now have a three-line work we have to attend, so this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you.
In the airport. So that's the order we need.